This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in this week for Terry Gross. In baseball, everybody loves to yell at the umpire, and in his new book, former Major League umpire Ken Kaiser doesn't mind yelling back. Kaiser's book with author David Fisher is Planet of the Umps, a colorful collection of baseball tales revealing what gets said in those screaming arguments on the field and what umpires are thinking when everybody in the park is sure they've just blown a call. Kaiser went to umpire school at age 18 and spent a lifetime calling games, including 23 years in the big leagues. He filled out off-seasons during his minor league career working as a bar bouncer and professional wrestler. His philosophy on managers who argue would make Johnny Cochran smile. When in doubt, throw him out. Kaiser's career ended in 1999 when umpires resigned as a labor negotiating strategy. He has a pending lawsuit against Major League Baseball over severance pay and pension benefits. I asked him about one of baseball's great traditions, when a team's manager gets into the umpire's face to dispute a call. Anybody who's gone to a ball game has seen arguments and wondered, what are they saying to each other? What are managers doing? I mean, are they trying to get thrown out sometimes?
Yeah, they'll come up. You know, I've had managers come up to me and say, "Kenny, hey, things just aren't going good here. You got to toss me tonight." And if I know the guy well, you know, I'll try and oblige him, try and help him out. They think for some reason that sets a fire underneath these players. And as far as I'm concerned, all it does is make them laugh. But you know, like Tony La Russa, I've done it with him, and there's been several umpires or several managers that I've been friends with that I'll give them the heave if they ask me to. But on the whole, when you see those guys come out there, they're not coming out there for that. They're coming out to argue.
Now, you'll let them argue a bit, right? I mean, what is it they have to do before they get tossed? Is it swearing? Is it insulting you personally?
Well, swearing is automatic. It's easy. And then they start talking about your mother, your family heritage and stuff like that. That'll get them gone quick, too. But sometimes it's just the length of the discussion. They won't let it go. They just won't leave. And There's a lot of premise for excommunication from that field, and believe me, we use them all.
Is it true you once tossed out two guys on one pitch, the first pitch of the game?
Yeah, the manager and that was a spring training game. That was Tommy Lasorda. I had just gotten off the plane. As a matter of fact, I ran from the plane to get my rent-a-car to the ballpark. I got there just before the national anthem. Got my gear on and ran to the field. So I get to the field, they're warming up, and the first hitter, Steve Sachs. First pitch comes in, and I call a strike. He starts yelling. I said, "What are you yelling at?" He says, "That ball's outside." I said, "We just got here. Would you mind spending a little time in this game?" He says, "Well, I'm not going to put up with this." He says, "You're right. Get out of here." So here comes Lasorda. He says, "What's going on?" I said, "I called one pitch. This guy's complaining. I ran him." I said, "Put him on the bus." I said, "Matter of fact, you go with him. You shouldn't be out here either."
So you're throwing the manager out now, too?
I've thrown out Tommy Lasorda, and I've thrown out Steve Sachs. I said, "You guys get in the bus." He says, "I'm not getting on the bus." I said, "I'll tell you what, if you don't get in the bus, we're leaving." He says, "You wouldn't do that." I said, "Why don't you try me?" They went on the bus.
there was a time when Billy Martin came out to question a call. You thought he might have been right.
Yeah, I had a play at second base, and I don't know what I did. I turned the wrong way, or I might have been thinking about a fight I had with the ex-wife, or who knows what the reason was. I called one of his players out, and he was safe from you to me. And Billy comes coming out to me, and I got, like I told you, I got along well with Bill Martin. He comes out, and he looks at me, he's got a smile on his face. He says, "Is that right?" I said, "Well, Billy, it may not be right, but that's the way it is." So he understood what I meant, and he walked away.
And Billy Martin, of course, is?
Yeah, Billy Martin was a manager of the New York Yankees.
Now, sometimes players will be jawing at an umpire from the dugout. And if you're calling from behind the plate, you got to stay pretty focused on the pitches and what's happening in the game and the count. You can't even necessarily tell who's yelling at you, can you? How do you handle that?
Oh, that's easy. You just tell the guy at first base, pick up who it is. He stands over watching them. As soon as they start yelling, he tells me, I throw them. That is something that's unacceptable. You're not going to sit there and start yelling from the dugout. You know, I'll tell you, a guy who was big at that was Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray liked to yell from the dugout. I tossed him many times in my career because we pretty much hated each other. There's a word where hate come in. And I tossed him one time for never saying nothing. I tossed him from him. I stand at first base. I folded my arms. He folded his. I took a step back. He took a step back. Took a step forward. He took a step forward and started smiling. I said, I'm gonna put my hands on my knees. If you put your hands on your knees, I'm throwing you out. He looks at me and smiles. I put my hand on my knees. He put his hands on his knees. I tossed him. He couldn't believe I threw him. He says, "I didn't say nothing." I says, "Action speaks louder than words. Get out of here."
Now, these are big league ball players, and they make a lot of money. Did you ever get in trouble for, I mean, you know, people aren't coming to the ballpark to watch Ken Kaiser. They're coming to watch Eddie Murray hit.
Well, they're coming to watch a baseball game to be played professionally. They're not coming for some jock to mock people or think he's arrogant to show up. They're not coming to see me. I'm not there for them to come to see me, but I'm also there to run the game in a professional way. And once you break those rules, I always said one thing. I'm like a landlord. You're renting from me. As soon as you stop paying the rent, it's time to leave.
My guest is former Major League umpire Ken Kaiser. His book is Planet of the Umps. Let's talk about getting calls right. Working the plate in a Major League ballgame has to be hard. I mean, you're back there and you look at, 300 pitches from guys that can throw a ball 90 miles an hour. Do you ever grade yourself? I mean, do you ever go back and look at tapes? I mean, when I watch ball games, there are always a few pitchers that I think, gosh, that's 8 inches outside the plate. I mean, do you ever look back at tapes and say, yeah, I missed that one?
No, I really don't. And I'll tell you why, because I make so many calls during a season. I call so many pitches. You're not going to get everything right. It's just a given. I figure if I'm not going to get them right, they're going to get somebody in there that's better than me, which they didn't do for 24 years. No, I mean, I knew that I wasn't getting everything right. But I knew that they didn't have anybody that could get any more right than I could. So, hey, you're just a victim of the system. I mean, like you said, you call 300 pitches. If you get 297 of them right, who's going to do better?
Another thing we see in baseball is the bench-clearing brawl. Can you tell when that's going to happen? Can you do anything about it?
Well, you try and get to that before it's happened. I've never had a real – I had one in the minor leagues, the worst I've ever seen. But in the big leagues, I never had one where it was a darn – I stopped them before it. I used to – grab a hold of the catcher and the hitter, or whoever the combatants might be, by their belts. And I was, I could bench press 400 pounds when I was a kid. And I was a pretty strong guy at one time. Not that I am anymore, believe me. And I'd grab a hold of their belts, and they couldn't go anywhere. I prevented a lot of battles that way. And matter of fact, my supervisor, Marty Springstead, kept saying to me and Bill Howe, "You're going to get hurt. He's trying to stop those fights. You let them go." The theory is to let them go and let them finish it off and let them break them up. But I always use the theory that I could stop it before it started. And it worked good for me, but I wouldn't tell a young umpire to handle it that way. Haller and Springstead were totally right.
So an umpire, when a batter drops the bat, starts to head to the mound, you're out in front of the plate holding on.
Oh, no, they're going to do a lot of they're going to do a lot of talking before that happens. They don't just strap it and run. You know, it's, what'd you say? I'll kick your what's going to happen. And a lot of guys want to be held before it happens. I mean, they're not looking to fight. They're just putting a show on. They're acting like they're tough guys for the rest of their club, but they're not so tough. I've only met a few real, legitimate tough ball players in my life.
When you were out on the bases, did you get bored? I mean, it's not like being behind the plate where you're in on every play.
I never got bored at first and third because I usually walked over and talked to the fans. I'd go over and have a Coke with them. I'd talk to them. People forget that the big word in this is game. Anybody know what the word game means? I know they're trying to turn it into a business, but it's still a baseball game. People like to talk to you, talk about families, where you grew up. And I would do things like that to keep it from being boring. And then there's certain situations, but that's all situation. I mean, if you're in the ninth inning and it's a 1-0 game, and you're not going to go over and start talking to the fans either. I mean, it's all situational. But you got an open game. You can talk to the people, shake hands, and put your hat on the kids. And, I enjoyed that. And people like to see that when I did it.
Did you talk to players on the field?
Well, you talk to them. I mean, what do you say? I mean, were you hiding your millions? I mean, a lot of them you talk to because you know them for so long.
Well, I would think you talk about the things that everybody talks about when they're watching a ball game, like, man, that was a heck of a line drive you just hit, or that was a great backhand play you made at third. You didn't?
Oh, no, never. Never. Never give them credit. It may come back and bite you. Never talk about them striking out either. No, you talked about everything but the game. You talked about the news. You talked about Iraq. You talk about other people's games, like, geez, you see what happened last night in Chicago or something like that. But you never discuss a game on the field.
All right. When you blow a call, do you ever give a team a makeup call?
You like
call?
That blow a call term, don't you? You're big on that blow a call. You never say about the ones you got right, you know?
You're like the bus driver. Every time he arrives back at the terminal safely, it's not news. It's when he has an accident that it's news.
All right, what's your question, Dave?
Are there makeup calls? You hear announcers say, well, so-and-so missed the call in the first inning, and now he's giving him a makeup call.
That is by far, And you can quote me, no matter who it is, the stupidest statement an announcer or color man or anybody in the booth could possibly make. I'm going to blame the other team for a mistake that I made. So I'm going to give it back where it might mean a ball game. How ignorant and dumb. You know, and I heard that in basketball. I've heard that in hockey. I can't even imagine those sports doing it either, where it's less to make a difference. Our game, you give a guy a pitch, could mean six runs. You don't give anybody anything. If you make a mistake, you live and die with it. That's the nature of the profession. I'm not going to blame St. Louis for a play I missed on Pittsburgh's, so I'm going to take one away from St. Louis. I get the biggest kick out of that, Dave, and I hear that a lot, but all that tells me is how much ignorance there is in this game.
Sammy Sosa was recently caught corking his bat. It's enough for umpires to try and keep track of what happens on the field, but some players will look for an edge in equipment. They may try and grease the ball. How do you keep track of that? Do you think players do they cheat out there?
I'm sure there's a lot of cheating going on, but that's not my job to be a policeman. My job is to call the game. Now, if I see something, or like in the Sosa situation where it broken, the stuff's all over the field, I mean, that's an obvious situation. It's a different animal. But to go out there and sneak behind a guy and wipe his butt to see if he's got grease on it, I'll pass. I know who cheats, who doesn't cheat, but you don't know how much they cheat. I mean, I used to know that Gaylord Perry cheated.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? How do you know somebody cheats?
Well, he used to throw a thing called a puff ball. He would take the rosin bag and put it on his palm. Then he'd throw a pitch, and when he released the ball, all the smoke would come out. You couldn't see the pitch. So I used to tell him, I said, I'll tell you what, Gaylord, I'm not going to throw you out for this, but I'll tell you what, every time you do that, I'm going to call it a ball. Every time. I don't care if bases are loaded, the win and run, and you throw it right down the middle, I'm calling it a ball. He tried me three times, and three times I called a ball. He walked into me, he says, I'll never do it again. I said, you got it.
Your knee was injured in a game. What happened there?
Well, I've been hurt several times in my career. I mean, I had a neck injury. It was worse than my knee injury. I caught a foul tip that hit me in the side of the mask and the neck. And between C6 and 7, it's never been right yet. I had a pinched nerve put me out for like over 3.5 months, and I still have it to this day. Matter of fact, I've been getting treatment on it lately, and it's caused by baseball, and I can't even get medical insurance for it. I hurt my knees several times. I got hit with foul tips. I've had catchers turn the wrong way and hit me and knock a knee out. If you look at the game today, I guess they got about – today I think there's 8 players out now that are regular umpires for injuries. So we're just like players. We get hurt too.
Let me come back to that. You're bending over a catcher, concentrating on getting a call right from a ball that can be coming at you at 90 miles an hour. Batter swings, goes off his bat. Catcher can't get it. It hits you in the neck, the shoulder maybe. How do you then ignore the pain, get back in there, and try and concentrate on the next pitch?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, because people don't realize the pain and stuff that goes with it. It's just you got to do it. I mean, if you don't, you know, the old theory is if I go down, then somebody else has to come in and finish my game. Well, you know, you have that macho ego type thing. Well, darn it, I'm hurt, but I'm going to finish that game. I've seen guys work. I saw one kid working in the minor leagues. A guy broke the bat off, and it stuck in his shoulder. Went right through the chest protector. In those days, they had real terrible chest protectors, those thin ones, those National League protectors.
Impaled
it? Stuck right in his shoulder like an arrow. And they pulled it out, and he finished the game, which I thought he was totally nuts.
Now, after you catch one of these foul tips and you manage to finish the game, you go home and your shoulder swells up, you ice it. I mean, don't you wonder, gosh, do I ever want to get back in front of the plate again? When you get back, next time it's your time to call the balls and strikes at the plate, do you think, I don't really want to be here?
Well, you also think of your daughter going to college, you got to pay that next tuition payment. So makes that pain ease a little bit better. you don't really say you don't want to do this, but you know it seems like when you get hit once, you're going to hit again, or you might go 25 games and nothing will happen. It's just it's like a time machine. Sooner or later, this thing's going to go off. It's going to get you.
Well, Ken Kaiser, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Former Major League umpire Ken Kaiser. His story of a life calling games and throwing out managers is Planet of the Umps. Coming up, we meet filmmaker Helen Stickler, whose new documentary tells the story of a star skateboarder whose journey took him to fame, wealth, emotional decline, and eventually murder. This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. Skateboarding is an everyday passion for many American teens. Though some adults regard street skaters as public nuisances, the nation's top skaters tour professionally, making good livings and achieving celebrity among a devoted following. A powerful documentary film opening in New York this week chronicles the rise of commercial skateboarding in the 1980s through the tragic story of its most marketable star. Mark Rogowski, known in the skating world as Gator, combined athletic talent and showmanship to become a giant of skateboarding, but fell apart emotionally when the industry changed. His psychological decline ended in homicidal rage when Rogowski sadistically raped and murdered a woman in his apartment. He's currently serving a prison term for the murder of Jessica Bergston. The documentary about Rogowski is called Stoked, The Rise and Fall of Gator. Early in the film, we hear this segment of a telephone prison call from Rogowski.
It's been hard over these 10 years to understand how I could become so weak or, you know, so affected that I ended up hurting Jessica Bergston. I was a coward, emotionally and mentally. I hate what I did, and I've hated myself, my life, and my past. Even any good I did before seems to pale in comparison, like wiped out by my crime.
My guests are Helen Stickler, who produced and directed Stoked, and Ken Park, a former professional skater and a friend of Mark Rogowski's who's interviewed in the film. Park eventually left skateboarding for college and a business career and is now president of a New York-based technology firm. Helen Stickler is an Emmy-nominated writer, producer, and director of documentary films and commercials. Her best-known documentary short is Andre the Giant Has a Posse. I asked Stickler how Mark Rogowski became a star.
He was a star of a skate video called Skate Visions, which was produced by Vision Skateboards. Through his sponsorship with Vision, he did receive he received royalties on skateboard decks, which had his graphic on it, and later through a clothing line, which also had his graphic, which was a kind of a descending spiral. It was an op art design, which they used for a number of years, and it was a top graphic in the 80s. And the graphic and the image that was created for him at Vision really served to brand him. He, I think you could say, was one of the first skateboarders to really, really understand and utilize the concept of branding. And a lot of that was because of Brad Dorfman, who ran Vision Streetwear.
When you saw someone like Mark, who, and I've said this so many times, way before the fame and way before the sponsorship even, you would be at the skate park with 7-8 other people in this, you know, tremendously large skateboard park, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Mark would appear. He'd never make a grand entrance, but he'd start consistently or, you know, systematically going from one of the areas to the next in the skate park. And I'm talking about areas in the skate park that nobody rode because they were either just incredibly non-rideable as the skateboard terrain goes, or it just everyone focused on this one area near the front of the park that had the keyhole, what we called the keyhole, which is one of the pools. But, you know, here's a guy that would go out, and literally every time he showed up to the park, he would skate every inch of that skate park, and he would do it with such style and such flair and such confidence that whether you liked the person wasn't really that important because you couldn't help but respect the guy. He was just so gifted for this sport.
One of the things that established the image of Mark Rogowski, Helen Stickler, you note in your documentary, was the events at Virginia Beach in 1986. Mm-hmm. What did Mark do there that had such impact?
The Mount Trashmore event was a skateboard contest that happened every year in Virginia Beach in 1986. Mark went out there and he got into a little bit of trouble with the law. The contest was really, really big. The local authorities had doubled up the number of police and security guards just as a way to have crowd control. And what I was told is that Mark went out to either his hotel or went out to get some fast food. He just took off in his car to run an errand during the body of the contest. And when he came back, he pulled into the wrong parking lot or the wrong parking spot, or he didn't want to stop and get checked. So the what he thought was a security guard had followed him over to the car and jumped up and was, you know, ran up to the car window to get him. And he thought he was a security guard, and he punched him. And it was an actual state trooper or local, you know, policeman. So they arrested him. took him down to jail right in the middle of the contest. And three of the top industry people at the time went down there and bailed him out. I think Brad Dorfman told me it was something like $400. And they took him back to the contest, and he skated that day. It was an event for those, you know, thousands and thousands of kids that were there, and they didn't really like the high police security presence that was there either. There was a lot of tension going on, and he just manifested it. And either by coincidence or design, the next month's magazines, he got more coverage between ads, editorial, and photo opportunities than he did at any other time in his career. I think in his mind, being on top of the world and then getting away with something like that, it just solidified his kind of bad boy image for himself as well as everyone else.
My guests are Helen Stickler, who produced and directed the film Stoked, The Rise and Fall of Gator, and former professional skateboarder Ken Parks. They'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.